you may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes a secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. A world dismissed as conspiracy by those who want to keep its secrets hidden, exposing the dangers, denials, and deceptions. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.
And ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
Welcome to this episode of the Hagman and Hagman Report. We're coming to you live from our radio and television studios here in beautiful Northwest Pennsylvania, where we broadcast live each and every weeknight. That's 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time right here on the Global Star Radio Network. So proud to be a part of the Global Star Radio Network. We're also simulcast, of course, on Blog Talk Radio, BTR. And you can catch us live and in color on our official YouTube channel. Folks, just go to HagmanandHagman.com. And right there, you'll find each and every venue on which we broadcast. And HagmanReport.com, that's our news information show prep site. HagmanReport.com, bookmark both sites. And there you'll be up and ready for every show that we have. Now, there you have it. Also, I've been, if you go to CanadaFreePress.com, folks, you'll find, in addition to HagmanReport.com, you'll find the function, conversational function, the comment function enabled at CanadaFreePress.com. Plus, they've got a wide array of wonderful guest columnists and at CanadaFreePress.com. Want to say hello to you folks in Canada. Hello to editor Judy McLeod for being such a great editor in Canada Free Press is a great website. So, HagmanReport.com for news, information, analysis, show prep. Hagman and Hagman.com for show information and to watch the show and to listen to the show. And there you have it. Bookmark both. And, of course, I'm Doug Hagman at the helm with fellow investigator and my son, Joe Hagman. We are something I like to call America's premier father-son investigative reporting team. We've got a great show lined up for you tonight. It's just us. Just us. Not to be confused with justice. We have a lot to talk about these issues, about the issue of justice indeed. But Joe, welcome, and it's great to have you here. Now next week you're going to be off, folks. Next week Joe is going to he's going to undergo some minor, relatively minor surgery. I laugh when people say minor surgery, because surgery in general is not minor anyway. But
going to be put under.
Yeah. I offered to do it with a pillow, but
Wednesday morning, 8:45 is when I go in.
Yeah,
and they said it shouldn't be too bad time wise, half hour to an hour, and I'll be out of there by noon, 1 o'clock, hopefully.
Yeah,
all goes well.
Yeah, and it's going to be good. I mean,
next week it's going to be an interesting week. Friday we have in studio Coach Dave Dovemeyer.
Yes,
be coming here and taking the plunge, coming to the Hagman and Hagman base camp, if you will,
the bunker.
Yeah,
the bunker.
And, I won't be on the show Wednesday or Thursday, but I will be in-studio audience on Friday when Coach Dave comes.
That's right. That's a good thing. You know, I mean, all in all, you're going to be fine.
PTSalt.com is Coach Dave's website, and he'll be our second in-studio guest. Folks, if you want to see Jack Cashel, the author of TWA Flight 800, that video is in the archive section on our YouTube channel. You can find it there.
You know, it's really interesting, Joe. I got a lot of blowback from that article I wrote and about Jack Cashel's book. By the way, that book is going to be available on Tuesday on Amazon. Jack Cashel, TWA 800, The Crash, The Cover-Up and Conspiracy. It's a fantastic book. I read the entire book, and it's very well documented. And one thing I noticed, Joe, about, and the 20th anniversary is coming up here in 3 weeks, but one thing I noticed about writing about TWA 800, people don't think it's relevant to today, but it is, because we have the Clinton criminal cabal still running things. But the blowback that I got, and I can't imagine what Jack Cashel has received. I haven't talked to him recently since the article was posted, but the animus toward the truth is beyond anything I've ever seen. And that is, that's something. You know you're over the target, I believe, when you start getting flack, like we are getting. And you can read, and again, read and comment at canonfreepress.com. Now it's down, it's aged down quite a bit, but it was a pretty popular piece.
Yeah, deconstructing the lie of TWA Flight 800. Actually, we got the article right here.
But it's important.
Yeah, the article is great. I have not read the book for Jack Cashel's book yet, but I do have it on my computer, and when I am down, I have about 5 books I plan on reading.
That's right.
While I'm down.
You're going to be reading a lot.
Yeah, and that's going to be one of the advantages of being down, is being able to step back, take a break, and gain a new perspective on things. That's one advantage of you know, downtime and or in any capacity. Of course.
So it's a hard way
to do
it.
It's going to be a little... It's going to be a little painful, but, you know, I've had my times of trouble and sitting in jail when I was younger as a very stupid young adult. And I read a lot then. And not comparing what I'm doing next week to jail, but when you have the opportunity to have the time like that, where you have no obligations, no responsibilities, except to recover from the surgery. I think it's just awesome, because it lets your mind go in a million different directions and reanalyzing things. But if there's anything I'm looking forward to, it's not the time off. It's not the surgery. It is the opportunity I'll have with the time. Because there's so much going on in the world. We cover news on a day-to-day basis, and you know, we cover in-depth news, and a lot of times the level of research does not come across on air. You know, I can do 2-3 hours of research on a story, and we talk about it for 5 minutes. But
no, and this is another thing. If you notice to my right and Joe's left, you see monitors up here. One thing we are incorporating now, and this is because of your help and your kind and generous assistance to us to grow. We are now, I mean, this is more interactive. I mean,
yeah.
You might think, okay, this is just, anyone could put a monitor on top of a desk. Yeah, that's true.
Well, it's discombobulated today because of me. And get this, I'm the one who got a college credit when I got my associate's degree, specifically on PowerPoint.
Yeah, okay.
And I can't use
it. What does that say, right?
I mean, right about maybe an hour before the show, we talked about setting this up, and as you can see, my dad has his PowerPoint running. I have, and will be displaying articles that we're talking about, news. Yeah, I
Eric
will also be learning PowerPoint this weekend, and hopefully it's going to be great once we get the ball rolling with this, because it'll add a whole nother dimension to our show as far as information is concerned, and the visuals that it will help incorporate into the information.
Right.
And we'll be on the same page.
And what we're working toward as well to bring a truly interactive program is to be able to have guests that appear, if they can't appear in studio, certainly they can appear on the monitor. So you can, there will be an interaction. So we're coming into the 21st century now. And again, all of this, when you think about it, well, why don't you just use this or that? Well, there's a lot of things going on behind. Yeah, what you can't see is Eric the tech at this spaceship-like desk turning the knobs. And then there's this whole whatever. I mean,
and then we have three platforms.
Intimidating equipment.
You know, our main platform, Globalstar Radio Network.
Yep.
We have YouTube, and then we have Blog Talk Radio. And when you need to... You need to have the same feed going to all three. Well, it's a little bit easier with audio, much more difficult when it comes to bringing on guests visually.
That's right.
On our side.
That's right.
Actually, we need a special, to build a special
tower,
computer tower to do that.
And that, again, I want to thank everyone who's helped us. This is not a sales pitch or anything like that. This is a genuine thank you. Because what we are doing is slowly growing and slowly adding to our abilities. And we attempt to be very good stewards with what we have been given. And that always, you know, that always scares me. If I can just make an admission here, that does concern me and scares me, because we don't want to squander any of our, I mean, what we have, we want to put the best use possible. So there's a lot of prayer and a lot of thought that goes into that. But it's because of you folks who have supported us over the years that we're able to do this. And I was talking to Eric right before the show, and I do see us growing and to a point where, this will be all second nature, and you're going to see some amazing things happen here. You're going to see some amazing improvements. And I think we've done a pretty good job here over the last year and a half, thanks to Eric, thanks to people like JD and Rhonda and others, everyone who volunteered their time or jumped on board. You know, Eric, of course, a big part of this. And I don't even know how he does it. He's got so many buttons and stuff. Everything that's lit up back there, I don't even know what they do. It's very intimidating.
Well, you should be reading. You should read the Mayday book.
Yeah, yeah, we do have a manual. It's called the Mayday Manual, which
it's basically in case Eric gets kidnapped, goes on vacation,
or just says, "Hey, heck with you guys."
Yeah.
Right? But tonight's program, it's just gonna be Joe and I. It's just gonna be just the two of us here, and of course you, whether you're listening to us, watching us from your living room, from your patrol car, from your boat. Actually, I got an email from someone who says, "You know what? We actually are watching you from our boat." That's pretty nice. And of course we're talking to people all the way from Australia, New Zealand, Hawaii, Hong Kong, and all across the United States, worldwide. Thank you so much for the platform, and thank you so much for tuning in.
Absolutely. Right. We got a lot to talk about tonight. You know, one of the major stories in the news is the Loretta Lynch, Bill Clinton meeting that took place on a airstrip in Phoenix, Arizona, which was, I mean, there's a lot of questions here. Attorney Lynch met with former President Bill Clinton in Arizona. Now, no pictures, no phones were allowed. The press corps was banned from taking any video,
yeah,
taking any photographs, and they obeyed their unconstitutional orders and demands that the FBI gave them. But what? I mean, Lynch came out and said they were talking about, you know, Bill Clinton's grandkids and you know, just minute and.
But that, it's all how important stuff. Stupid, but do they think we are?
Exactly. And my question is, did they meet up to conspire, or did they meet up in order to conspire the continuation of the cover-up of the email scandal?
Yeah.
In Benghazi, or did they meet up to conspire to create some other event or distraction that will remove people from worrying about that? And Lynch also came out today and said that she will likely recommend the investigators, or she will likely back the investigators' recommendations on the Hillary Clinton email investigation. And it's being reported in many different ways, but her words, the way she said it, leaves a lot of room for interpretation. It's very broad. She may recommend, or may, you know.
Well, yeah, even if Comey were to recommend, Comey being the head of the FBI, an indictment, Lynch has the ability to slow walk that indictment until after the conventions or after the election. And
like they did with the 27 months. We
right,
have to wait.
Right. Which, and you pointed out something very interesting about the numerology aspect of the 27 months.
Yeah, the 27 months, State Department is going to wait before releasing, Clinton's foundation email, or the emails related to the Clinton Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you do the numerology, I read the article, that would put the date of release about September 18th, 2018. But if you just look at the 27 months, 27 is 9.
That's right.
And then in 2018, if you add that up, that's 11. Which could
so
be nothing.
So you have a 9 and 11.
Right, which could be nothing. But it could also signal that in 27 months, there's going to be something else going on that it's not going to matter at all what if it's released or not.
Well,
and that's what I thought. It was a Steve Quayle moment in the shower.
In the shower.
In the shower. Honest to God's truth.
I always tease Steve about that, saying I don't take enough showers, or he spends too much time in the shower. I'm not sure which, but
no.
But you know, about Lynch and about this story, people think, well, this could be a distraction. I mean, it's no big deal, and the attempt to minimize what happened is amazing. But here's what I would urge everyone to really pay attention to. And again, there are so many things taking place that it's difficult to triage these news items. But what I see in the larger sense, Joe, is a constitutional crisis in the making.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
We're there already, but.
Right. But I had the chance to talk with Steve Quayle this morning or this afternoon. I don't know, sometime today. And we were talking
about. Was he in the shower?
No. No. And the thing about this is, this is all part of a larger mosaic of things that are taking place. But here's the thing. We've got on the left, on the Democratic side, a candidate, and that's Hillary Diane Rodham, the witch Clinton, running for president. She's a presumptive nominee on the Democratic side. On the communist, socialist, Marxist, progressive side. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
well, let's.
She's under an FBI investigation. All right. Go on.
I just want to back up a sec because people, we're so far removed from a constitutional republic that was set up as America was founded as a constitutional republic. The Declaration of Independence, the Bill of Rights, the Constitution were put into effect in order to restrict the government.
Right.
From becoming overreaching, overbearing.
Exactly. The limitations.
And that has been reversed.
Right.
From the time of July 4th, 1776 until now.
The Constitution and the Bill of Rights was to restrict the government's overreach. Of course, it grants the rights of the people. But all right, but getting back to Hillary Clinton, Hillary the Witch Clinton, and I mean that literally, in the form in the manner that of her
summoning Eleanor Roosevelt and
well that and, other and her monthly meetings. Her alleged monthly meetings and monthly trips to California, but with respect to Loretta Lynch and Hillary Clinton, the issue is larger than I think we are being led to believe. First of all, the scandals are not scandals; they're crimes.
Yep.
And the number of scandals, crimes, are beyond anything that we have talked about. I mean, aside from the emails. Issue, the Benghazi situation. The Clinton Foundation, you've got to understand the Clinton Foundation is, in my personal and professional view, and I'm looking at this, there are a lot of offshoot shell companies where money is being, in my, again, based on my findings, I could be wrong, but it certainly looks like there's some money laundering going on here.
Yeah, there is information that, and let me pull this up so I get it correct.
As I'm going here, what I see taking place on the left is a potential constitutional crisis if they can slow walk any indictment until after the nomination process and or election. On the right, we have a very similar situation with Donald Trump and with the establishment Republicans, including those who are jumping ship and saying, well, Trump is no good and we've got to get our guy in there. Folks, this is not how the system is. The system is breaking down right before our very eyes. And, you know, every effect, or every attempt, I should say, to make what is taking place today appear normal in the mainstream media or by the political pundits, and I'll even say those people who are supposed to be social conservatives and political conservatives, whether they're on Fox News or independent, it is not working. It's not fooling the public. It's not fooling you because you know that things are not normal. So, but getting back to Lynch and Clinton, you've got, and think of it this way. Judge Jeanine said it perfectly, because Lynch is like a DA, and Clinton, Bill, Bubba, is a witness and or potential defendant in a criminal investigation. It doesn't matter if he's a witness or a potential defendant. You don't have a conversation with the prosecuting attorney, the DA, or in this case, the Department of Justice, Lynch. That doesn't happen. Even the people were talking about the appearance of impropriety. We are so, I mean, that's in our rearview mirror, the appearance of impropriety. Now, well, I think a bigger issue at play here is the Clinton Foundation, because I do suspect Hillary could accept being knocked out of the running for the presidency, but to lose control of the Clinton Foundation, I don't think she wants that. Go ahead.
The headline on Fox News: Clinton sought secret info on EU bailout plans as son-in-law's doomed hedge fund gambled on Greece. Now, this article goes on to talk about hedge fund manager Mark Mezvinsky.
Okay, we'll go with that.
Mark has friends in high places when he bet big on a Greek economic recovery. But even the keen interest of his mother-in-law, then Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, wasn't enough to spare him and his investors from financial tragedy. In 2012, Mezvinsky, the husband of Chelsea Clinton, created a $325 million basket of offshore funds under the Eagle Vale Partners banner through a special arrangement with investment bank Goldman Sachs, of course. The funds have lost tens of millions of dollars, predicting that bailouts of the Greek banking system would pump up the value of the country's distressed bonds. One fund exclusively dedicated to Greek debt suffered near total losses. Clinton stepped down as Secretary of State in 2013 to run for president, but newly released emails from 2012 show she and Clinton Foundation consultant Sidney Blumenthal shared classified information about how German leadership viewed the prospects for a Greek bailout. Clinton also shared protected State Department information about Greek bonds with her husband at the same time that her son-in-law aimed his hedge fund at Greece. Talk about insider trading.
So we're talking about the monetization of a disaster here.
Yes. They go on to say that the America's top diplomat kept a sharp eye on intelligence, assessing the chances of a bailout of the Greek central bank. However, sharing such sensitive information with friends and family would have been highly improper. Federal regulations prohibit the use of non-public information to further private interests or the interests of others. The mere perception of a conflict of interest is unacceptable.
Mm-hmm.
Though its press representative, Eagle Vale, declined to comment for the story, Clinton's campaign's press office did not respond to a request for comment either. A former Goldman Sachs broker himself, Mezvisky, former Eagle Vale Management, with two ex-Goldman Sachs partners in October 2011, as a global macro firm, the strategy was to seek profit opportunities in political volatile situations. They set up several hedge funds in the Cayman Islands, a secretive tax haven, with Goldman Sachs serving as Eagle Vale's prime broker and banker. And the story goes on from here. It gets into the amount of money. I mean, there's donations made to $5 million to the Clinton Foundation, $860,000 to Hillary Clinton's political campaigns.
Mm-hmm.
Shortly after Clinton resigned, Goldman Sachs also paid her about $700,000 in speaking fees. And the marriage between the Clinton Foundation and the Clinton criminal cabal and Goldman Sachs Bank is just about as evil and deep as it gets.
That's right.
And while we're on the subject of money, I mean, this opens up a whole new angle for investigators.
Well, let's not go off of Hillary Clinton in that meeting, because it's interesting that there were no photographs allowed, no pictures allowed to be taken.
Yeah.
At the meeting between
Bill
and Lynch.
Loretta. Yeah.
It's beyond anything that I've.
Yeah, there was a headline on Drudge that said Secret Service was livid. The FBI ordered journalists to put their cameras down, to not take pictures or videos. And what did they have to hide? Especially when Loretta Lynch comes out and says this was purely a social encounter, but I certainly wouldn't do it again.
Yeah, not funny, and certainly not.
And the connection between the timing of her coming out and sharing that she's going to go along with the recommendations of her team the FBI's inquiry. And Hillary Clinton is now set to meet with the FBI over the weekend.
Interesting timing on that, too. When you look at the timing where the interest level of the media would not be even close.
Right.
Given the holiday. And folks, I would urge, speaking of this, just as kind of a side note, we're going to be getting into this later, I would urge everyone to be extremely vigilant this week, this weekend, because I do believe we are going to see certain things happen, certain things take place this weekend that,
one thing you won't see is fireworks in a lot of places.
Well, yeah, yeah, and we're going to be getting into that more, but folks, please be vigilant, because the threat level, this weekend is extremely high. And I understand the false flags. I understand that, you know, the powers want everyone to remain in a state of fear. But I do believe from a fundamentalist Islamic or from an Islamic point of view. This weekend is important, as well as the Illuminati, the globalist point of view as well. A very significant weekend.
Yeah, do you know the there was a report that came out today from the Washington Times. U.S. accepts record number of Syrian refugees in June, despite the terrorist
terrorist screening transport. Worries. I mean, 2,300 transporting the
from Mexico to the U.S. via the southern border. The U.S. accepted more than 2,300 Syrian refugees in June alone,
right,
sending the fiscal year total soaring past the 5,000 mark and putting the government on track to surpass Obama's goal of 10,000 by the end of September, in which he also wants to extend that, 300-400% in by next year.
Mm-hmm.
And what this article says is they are unscreened, unvetted, and we talked about this yesterday with Paul McGuire, and we've talked about it with many other guests, especially Bill Warner. They, being the Syrian, the ISIS fighters, the sleeper cells,
right,
have stated through the migration process, they will invade the nations of the Western world to put their pieces in place to strike when needed.
That's right.
We see today there's been another terrorist attack, 4 police officers killed, and dozens of hostages as 9 gunmen take over a cafe in Bangladesh. For the last, for the last month, every week there's been an ISIS terrorist attack that has grabbed major headlines that have been very deadly, from the Pulse nightclub to the airport in Istanbul to now Bangladesh this week. And they say, ISIS says, it's coming to America.
It's here. It's already here in America.
And it goes on to say in this article about accepting the Syrian refugees. Of those accepted in June, more than 99% are Sunni Muslims. Just 8 identified as Christians. So 2,300 refugees.
Yep.
8 Christians.
Well, we've talked about this before. So, anyway.
Before,
We got to talk about too, and this seems a little bit, again, if it seems a little bit discombobulated in your listening to this, what you're not seeing is the fact that we are trying the news articles and the stories, we're trying to match them up with what's on our screens and such. And hey, sometimes we just, this is new to us, but again, we want to be a little bit more, focused. But folks, if you're not paying attention, things can get by you. Virtually no one was paying attention, Kerry signed the UN gun ban treaty.
Okay. Now, I did some research on this, because I saw this also.
Fire away with this, because
this has been reported in 2013 and in 2015.
Yes.
That Kerry signed the UN UN gun ban treaty.
Right.
But it's also being reported today.
Yes.
New York City Guns.com.
Yes.
And a number of other sites are reporting that while nobody was paying attention, Kerry signs UN gun ban.
Right.
No. Signed an anti-gun treaty with the United Nations that the U.S. Senate has not signed off on, does not want, and said they are against.
Okay, and many people believe, as I do, any agreement such as this is not going to work out, because how would they enforce it? All right, now you've got statistically 88 guns per 100 people here in the United States. That's the most cited statistic. I believe that's low. I believe that you have more than 1 gun per person here in the United States, but the official citations are 88.5 guns, I believe it is, for every person, or for every 100 people in the United States. Now, and we're going back to the UN gun ban treaty. Now, we've heard this, as you pointed out, this is not new. The treaty that Kerry signed without authorization from the Senate would create this unconstitutional registry of all U.S. gun buyers.
Yeah.
And ultimately would lead the UN to control our gun rights.
As well as allow the UN to a registration, a list of those citizens that have permits for concealed carry or weapons.
Now, we know that Kerry signed a document on Wednesday. We know that it was related to the controversial UN treaty, arms treaty. What if he signed this in 2013 and 2015, or it was reported on those two occasions, then what's different now? Okay, that's what I guess that's what I'm asking, because you had pointed this out, but it's being reported widespread now that he signed this on Wednesday, and this is about, according to Kerry and about the people who are behind this, this is about keeping weapons out of the hands of terrorists and rogue actors, and this is about reducing the risk of international transfers of conventional arms that are going to be used to carry out America's worst or the world's worst crimes. And more BS, where he says this is about keeping America safe, Americans safe, and keeping America strong, and so on. Now, the U.S. Senate has the final say on whether to approve the agreement. Corker, Senator Bob Corker from Tennessee, in a letter to Obama, had urged them not to take any action to implement the treaty without the consent of the Senate. There, and here's where I think the story exists, is... Yes, for a treaty constitutionally to be enforced, it would have to be, it'd have to have the full force of the Senate behind the treaty. Now, what the rumor mill has, and I'm not talking about the website, I'm talking about, we know what the rumor is Obama wants to sidestep the legislative part and somehow enforce this gun registry or comply with this UN gun registry, which, frankly, and Corker feels the same way, the senator from Tennessee, saying, don't take any action to implement this without the Senate's approval.
Yeah, and this also relates the gun story in California. Governor Jerry Brown, in a move to enhance public safety, signs gun control proposal into law. Now, there's a one-page PDF I have right here. I can pull up on the screen, which shows the bills that he is signing into law, as well as gives a short statement saying, my goal in signing these bills is to enhance public safety by tightening our existing laws in a responsible and focused manner while protecting the rights of law-abiding gun owners.
Brown today signed six gun control bills, including a requirement that ammunition purchasers, if you live in California and you want to buy ammo, you've got to undergo a background check. Now, Brown vetoed five other measures, but of the six, all right, he said his goal in signing these bills, again, it's for the safety of the public. Now, here's what, I got to turn that off. Here's what, Brown had, or here's what the governor signed, or the bills that the governor signed are going to do the following. It's going to require, number one, it's going to require an ID and background check to purchase ammo and create a new state database of ammunition owners. So if you go out to your sports store and buy a box of 22 shells, you're going to have to, number one, undergo a background check, and number two, there's going to be, your name's going to be on a list. It bans the possession of ammunition magazines that hold more than 10 rounds.
Mm-hmm.
All right? That's important. And it restricts the loaning of guns without background checks to close family members. So if you're out there in California and you and your dad want to go hunting and your dad says, hey, can I borrow your 22? No, ain't going to happen. Go ahead.
The bill signed by Brown also include a ban on the sale of semi-automatic rifles equipped with so-called bullet buttons that allow the removal and replacement of magazines. Also, administrative officials said Friday that the earlier version was so broad as to have expanded California's definition of an assault weapon. The bill he signed Friday, they said, was more precisely focused on the issue of how ammunition magazines are quickly changed out. Military assault weapons have no place in our streets, is what one of the senators of California, Mark Levin, Assemblyman Mark Levin. Brown's office noted that Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom had qualified as more expansive gun control measures for the November ballot. The governor took swift action today, and voters will have a chance to go even further in November, if they choose, with the lieutenant governor's initiative, said Evan Westrup, a spokesman for Brown. And from there, it goes on to say, today's steps in the right direction will grow into a giant leap forward for public safety. If voters pass the Safety for All initiative to keep guns and ammo out of the wrong hands, Newsom said.
Newsom is a real problem. I mean, yeah. he's been a real problem forever. But look at this, folks. Firearm homicides by race, ethnicity. This is from 2013. You've got the... Now, just look at this.
Who'd we have on to talk about this? Colin Flaherty?
Yeah, which we got a lot of backlash from that, too. 14.74. Now, you know what? I'm looking at the firearm homicides per 100,000 people. The majority, look at that center line right there. That's
Is that black on black, correct?
Black, that's just black. Of firearm homicides by race or ethnicity, 14.74 per 100,000. You've got white coming in at 1.39. You've got Hispanic at 3.43. You've got, and of course, Asian Pacific Islander at 0.94. So, overwhelmingly, and you can see that right there on that chart, overwhelmingly, you've got, and the source, by the way, is the CDC on this. And where's the problem coming from? And it's not just blacks against whites, it's black on black crime too.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I bring that up because it does have relevance to this. But when you look at the Republican Party, if you associate yourself with Republicans or the Republican Party, where's the outrage in California? Where are the attempts to stop this insanity that we're seeing? This is incredible. And Oregon is not too far behind, folks, because they're going to be following suit with respect to this.
There's a story that nobody has been talking about from South Carolina, a nightclub in South Carolina.
Yes.
Where there was a gunman who was going to...
Concealed carry guy.
Was going into a...
Not the gunman. I'm sorry.
Right. The gunman was going into the nightclub to shoot up the place. And was stopped, I believe, by an off-duty police officer.
Who had a gun concealed
and
carry.
And nobody died. But you don't hear about that. Obviously, you hear about the, Orlando massacre, where the Omar Mateen went in there and allegedly killed 49 people, injuring 100-some more.
Right.
But you don't hear about the disaster averted due to a person with a weapon on them. At the right place at the right time.
That's right.
Could have saved 50, 100 lives. Who knows?
But we want to make sure that people know that people are saved by people who are carrying concealed weapons. Legally, you can stop. And I would urge everyone who has the legal right under our laws to get a concealed weapons carry permit and definitely carry the weapons, especially now, folks. As I said earlier this week, and I'm going to have additional information about this next week, but we are coming into a time period where all of our civil liberties are going to be, well, all of our safety, I should say, or collectively and individually, the safety of us and our families is going to be threatened. And you're going to see a rise in home invasions. You're going to see a rise in street violence. You're going to see a rise in murders. And this is all being funded.
We can look at Europe.
Yep.
As our future, as what America will look like in the near future, as far as censorship is concerned.
Yep.
As far as money is concerned, and as far as the what they're doing with guns, you can't get a gun. If you live in countries in the EU, in Paris, in London,
that's right.
You can't have a gun. But how did these terrorists with machine guns run into the, killing people? There was nobody there to fight back. Even the police don't carry guns sometimes over there. And it's just insanity. Gun control laws do not stop crazy people. It only empowers those people, and if people want to, you know, we talk about this many times. If somebody wants to murder another person, they're going to find a way to do it with or without a gun.
I want to also mention, folks, I don't know whether how many of you heard this or not, Mike Norris, who was on our program not too long ago, was
poisoned.
That's kind of the way it looks. He was Sunday, he was in Florida, or this past weekend he was in Florida at the debut of the movie Armageddon. He flew to Columbus and to Dayton, and he was meeting people at the various
talking to people after the the showings of the video. He said that he likes the interaction that he gets and the feedback from people who watch the movie.
Well, in Columbus, it's been reported, and True News had the exclusive on this, the initial exclusive on this. I was talking with a number of people, including Steve. And by the way, Mike is recovering. He's fine. I shouldn't say fine. I mean,
his face was all swelled up and red.
Yep. Now, he's the son of Chuck Norris, of course.
Walker, Texas Ranger.
He was reportedly poisoned by a guy in a gray suit who walked up to him. Now, there was a in Ohio, okay, and touched his neck, and from that physical contact, a welt formed, and that welt then gave way to these the puffiness, hives, and sores, swelling on his face, as if he was dunked headfirst into a vat of poison ivy. I don't know how else to describe it. Well, the inside story on this, and I think True News had reported on what had happened. He had woken up at like 3:30 in the morning after he was touched on the neck by this guy in a gray suit. It was really kind of a freaky thing. And his face was like on fire. He took a picture. Then he flew back to his home in Dallas. He sought medical treatment. And according to Mike Norris, the word poison did come up with respect to the doctor, and the doctor was very adamant. He said, look, it's whatever you have is not systemic. It didn't come from you eating shellfish, for example. It was limited to his upper torso, his face,
right,
and his neck.
Which begs the question, when I first saw that, I wondered, was the poison administered properly, and or what did they screw something up to where were they trying to kill him? I guess was the where I was thinking.
Right.
And did they mess up?
And Mike Norris is not a paranoid guy. Anything but a paranoid guy. Okay. He's a tough guy, and he understands the risk, but he's not paranoid. So that did not jump into his mind. The fact that, oh my goodness, this, you know, I've been hit by this, you know, whatever. No. However, the physician was saying, man, there's something not right here. Now, I'll just look. He did have blood tests done, and that's all I'm going to say. And I'm not going to say anything more because I don't have his permission or anyone's permission. But folks, look, it's getting bad out there, and when you are when you're in that position where you're, and people might say, well, why bother with something like that? You know, in fact, that was my first reaction is, why not, if you're going to do something, why do it that way? Why not just shoot somebody? I mean, if that's your intent, why would this perpetrator not do something more lethal? Well, perhaps this is to send a message. I don't know the answer to that, but he's undaunted by what happened, and he'll be back on the circuit again.
Well, thank the Lord for that.
Yeah. But I just wanted to make sure people knew, and Gary Haven had talked to Alex Jones on InfoWars, and of course, Ed from True News interviewed Mike Norris, and that was the first interview he did, and as of Friday today, he's much better. So,
I want to touch on this story. I know we're coming up near the end of the hour. This is from Reuters. U.S. says it killed up to 116 civilians in airstrikes outside of war zones. Now stay with me here.
Yep.
The U.S. government accepted responsibility on Friday for inadvertently killing up to 116 civilians in strikes in countries where we are not at war. A major disclosure likely to inflame debate about targeted killings and the use of drones. Barack Obama's goal for the release of the numbers, which are higher than any previously official acknowledged, but vastly below private estimates, is to create greater transparency about what the U.S. military and CIA are doing to fight militants plotting against the United States. But the figures, which covered strikes from the day Obama took office in January of 2009 through the end of the very last day of last year, were below even the most conservative estimates by non-governmental organizations that spent years tallying U.S. strikes in countries such as Pakistan, Yemen, and Somalia. The numbers reported by the White House today simply don't add up, and we're disappointed by that. That was from a lawyer here. But they go on to say, drone advocacies, including those within the U.S. military, argue the strikes are essential and part of reducing the ability of militant groups to plot attacks against the U.S. How are droning people in Pakistan and Yemen stopping the militants from attacking people inside the U.S., I ask? And two, from a legal standpoint, the article starts out by saying the U.S. government accepted responsibility for inadvertently killing up to 116 civilians in strikes on countries where America is not at war. Now, where's the accountability? Oops, I killed 116 people. It's okay. It was just an accident. I didn't mean to do it. How do we bring justice to these people who are carrying out these atrocities? From the ones that push the buttons and take the orders to the ones that give the orders.
Well, I'm sure that the theory here is that we target the individuals who are giving the orders. We target the high-value targets are the ones who are coordinating strikes outside of their area of operation. So there could be a command and control in Pakistan that is giving orders to people here in the United States, and the theory is we take out that command and control, then you effectively neuter the operation here in the United States. That's the theory. Now, is that how it actually plays out? That's a different story.
Well, you look at this, the story of Anwar al-Awlaki.
Right. We had him in custody.
He was at the Pentagon 10 months after 9/11. But he was allegedly a 9/11 mastermind who was killed in a drone strike, as well as his 16-year-old United States citizen son and his son's friend.
So that was a case of us assassinating a United States citizen overseas.
Yes, with a drone. And a former CIA agent.
And that's coming to this country, too.
But Paul Pillar, a former CIA agent, says this. We're still faced with the basic question. Is the number of bad guys who are taken out of commission by drone strikes greater or less than the number of people who are inspired to turn to violent acts? And it's just so far from, in my mind, that's so far from the point here. It's one thing, isn't it treason to carry out or drop bombs on countries or people where we're not, then there's no declaration of war?
Well, when's the last declaration of war? When was the last time the Congress issued a declaration of war?
Was it Iraq and Afghanistan? World War II was the last declared war, was it not?
Let's see if we can get a good answer from the audience listening. Send it to studio@HagmanandHagman.com. When's the last time the United States actually made a declaration of war according or pursuant to the U.S. Constitution? Folks, we're going to be back right really quick. And on the other side, what about those United Nations trucks that, oh my goodness, at least one radio personality mocked and said, it's just this conspiracy theory. What about that? What's going on? Because suddenly, the United Nations is saying, they're not ours. More on the other side. You're listening to Doug and Joe, the Hagman and the Hagman Report. We're going to be right back. Stay with us on this, well, on this end of the week edition. Hang in there.
This is the Global Star Radio Network.